Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. If you're building a SaaS business, achieving compliance with SOC 2, ISO 27001, or other in-demand frameworks can unlock major growth for your company and establish customer trust. However, this process is often time-intensive and costly. Vonta automates your compliance work, getting you audit ready quickly and saving you up to 85% of associated costs. And Vonta scales with your business, helping you continuously monitor compliance, unify risk management, and streamline security reviews. Join 8,000 global companies like Synethia, Flow Health, and Alica Bank that use Vonta to build trust and prove security in real time. Our audience gets a special offer of $1,000 off Vonta at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vonta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups podcast. My guest today is Sander van der Rijt, the co-founder and CEO of PlanRadar, an award-winning digital SaaS platform for documentation, task management, and communication in construction and real estate projects. PlanRadar has grown to around 500 team members and has raised over $100 million in funding. The company operates in over 75 markets worldwide, makes life easier for over 150,000 users, and is available in more than 20 languages. Sander, welcome to the show. I hope I got the numbers right.
Perfect. Yeah, sounds great. Thank you for the invitation, and you can start working for us and pitch to customers. No problem.
Amazing. Sander, so this was kind of my pitch of your company. Now, if you had to pitch PlanRadar in 30 seconds, let's even make it more fun. If you had to pitch PlanRadar in 30 seconds to your kids, how would you do it?
Okay. that's a tough one. And also it's like some time ago since I did the last pitch. But like, I mean, like basically how I would do it is, I mean, for kids, okay, that's even more challenging. So Let's put it that way. Like, PlanRadar, it's for construction real estate, like for building houses and shopping centers. And yes, people doing that, they use pencils, they use big blueprints, they use cameras, they do voice dictation, and then they organize themselves. With PlanRadar, they can use their smartphone or their tablet. They have like a digital blueprint. They can pin on the plan all kind of tasks and videos and voice recording. And then they can manage each other and manage the project. And everything is digital and in one platform and available. So this is basically how I would explain it to my kids.
Nice.
To Sounds you, good. I would explain it with more sophisticated words.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it's better to keep it simple. Come on, Sander. Let's keep it simple.
Yeah, sure.
Everyone understands it. Sander, so what's a typical day like for you as a CEO of PlanRadar? another question that you haven't asked, right?
I would say it starts early and it ends late, of course. But I mean, like, normally, how is my day? Like, after all these years, I found already my own routine. So normally, I hand like emails and tasks until 10 a.m. Then I have like meetings from 10 until 5 a.m. Sometimes lunch, sometimes not, depending on how much is on the table. So from 10 to 5, let's call it that way. It's not my time. It's the time of all the others. And then from 5 to 7 again, like my own tasks or any plans, anything that's on the table. And then I try to stop at 7 and go and see my family.
Good, good. So work-life balance is there in place. I'm happy to hear that. Sander, what's the secret sauce behind PlanRadar's success? Because you guys seem to be pretty successful.
Yeah, thank you. I would say like one of the main success factors is that, it's not our first startup. Like for Ibrahim, it's one of my co-founders and me, it's already the eighth startup already that we are building. And that means we have like three other companies up and running with their own management. We had like two exits already, and two times we successfully managed to liquidate the company, which means we fucked up, right?
Yeah.
So, why I'm saying this, because the secret sauce is we did already a lot of mistakes in the past. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we try not to do the same mistakes again. So there have been learnings, there have been challenges in the past. And I think one of the success factors is that we can take all the learning from the past and apply it at PlanGrader. And I mean, like, another thing is like the team as well, because over the past we had different teams and we are five co-founders. And all of them, they are still on board after 10 years. All of them operational is still on board. Only that is already a statement, I think. And next to these founders, we also, you know, built, as you mentioned, a team of about 500 people now. Mm-hmm. And our mantra there is like really execution. Exactly. So I think this is one of our strengths. Like, execution is king. You can have a lot of good ideas, you can have a lot of good strategies, but at the end of the day, you need to execute. And it's, from my point of view, it's better to do a few mistakes and get it over the line compared to be perfect and have a perfect plan and never finish.
Perfect doesn't exist. And execution should be every founder's superpower. I agree.
For sure, yeah.
And so actually, I was... kind of hoping that you're going to say that also team, as you mentioned, is behind the secret sauce of PlanRadar. So let's talk about team, Sander. What's your strategy for hiring and retaining top talent?
Hiring and retaining. Okay, it's a good question because you mentioned like both important parts, because it's not only the hiring, you also need to keep the good people. Yeah. And when we first think about hiring, I think you need to look at hiring like you look on sales. So you need to build the pipe, you need to convert from top line until end of funnel. And you have all the different steps where you need to push the customers or your new employees through until you have a successful closed one. And if you approach it like sales, I think you also understand then in different levels where you need to optimize. If you, as an example, you need more top line, you need more candidates, okay, try different channels. The conversion from sent offer until to accepted offer is not good enough. Okay, there is something in the offer you need to improve. You need to react to market. And if you look at it via that lens, you can like push and optimize to get like good people. So that's for hiring. Yeah, I would look at it as like sales. And retaining top talent, it's the other important part. Sometimes it's for your top performance, it's even more important than hiring, because like it's costly to do replacements than to keep your existing top performers. Exactly. And from my point of view or from my experience, in most of the cases for the top performers, it's also not only money. They are like intrinsically motivated. So I think to retain them, you need to understand like what really drives them. And if you can help the people to succeed in their own targets, then most likely the company will also succeed in its targets, because they are here for a certain reason. And for that also, we invest a lot in these talent and performance management and trying to improve people or improve their strengths, and also leadership trainings and so on. And also think about the different dimensions you can grow the top performers. So it's not only the leadership dimension or management dimension. You also can become like a specialist in your area.
100%. And you also, so as you mentioned, you kind of gotta get to, like, you have to know your the people you work with very well.
Sure.
And you have to know what their ambitions are, goals are, and how to keep them happy, so you don't have to, so they actually perform better. Amazing. If you actually kind of follow up question to that, if you could hire any three people, dead or alive, for your team, who would they be and why?
You have a lot of funny questions.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
I mean, this is a tough one again, but like, Yeah, as mentioned, like when I think about the founder team, we have like really a perfect team, like five strong people, everybody strong in their own domain. But, you know, when I think about any people that I can hire, maybe, yeah, let's go like this. Like for sales, I would hire Jordan Belfort, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street for sales would be perfect, right?
Would be perfect. And so if I follow that path, then I would go like for Steve Jobs for product and Warren Buffett for finance.
Oh yeah,
so put it that way. And then you need somebody in people management who can arrange like making a team out of them. But amazing. Yeah, I will go for the three of them.
Okay, awesome. So actually changing the topic a bit, I mentioned at the beginning when I was pitching your company that you guys operate in over 75 markets globally. So I was wondering, because, you know, going international might be hard. So I was wondering, what challenges have you faced as Planlater, you know, expanded to over 70 markets globally?
Yeah, sure.
What are the biggest pitfalls kind of that you would encounter to avoid?
I mean, like to answer that question, I would go a little bit through the history, like how it happened for us, because, you know, we started in Dach, in small Austria. Mm-hmm. As an example. So when you're starting a business in Austria, you need to think from the beginning about expansion because the Austrian market is simply too small. So we were from the beginning going for Dach, like three different countries, or except the language, this is the same, but there are a lot of differences between Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. But like, okay, we targeted them, and we had at the very beginning like a point solution, just defect management. Yeah. And yeah, started to sell. And then we started to do online ads as well. And suddenly it happened that there were people signing up from like different countries all over the world, like Australia, like the UK, like markets we never targeted, but like they just found us in the internet, they swipe the credit card and start to work. Yeah. So the first thing is like to really expand, and this example shows it, is you need to have a product that can really scale without like, let's say, services or efforts that you have in sight. And this is actually the masterpiece at the end of the day in SaaS, like to build a software that just runs and works for people, and they are paying like monthly or yearly license fees to use it. So not a lot of services inside. And when you have the product, then you can really scale and go international. And for us, we recognize just by people signing up and using the product that there's the same problem that we are solving in Dach, it's all over the world. Yeah. So, okay, for us, this was the driver to say like, okay, we want to go global. And in the beginning, we just started like to, you know, online ads, do localization for us. Just it was the change of the language or adding additional languages. And then we recognized, of course, that in our industry, construction, real estate, you know, people are old-fashioned. So sometimes you need to meet them face-to-face. You need to speak the language. You cannot, you know, catch all of them just online without human interaction. So for us then to go global, the next step was like we need to set up different locations. And we started in Europe, set up offices in all major European cities. Mm-hmm. And then in the next phase, we expanded globally, like to go also to the US and Brazil, GCC, Australia, Southeast Asia. And then you are in globalization. Okay, so in the beginning, it was the product. Then organization becomes more important, like org structure, org design, and everything. And for us, I think like the biggest challenge or the pitfall was like finding a right balance between your own pattern, your own like go-to-market approach versus local approach or localization. Yes. So it's always like in the beginning, we just said like, okay, let's find a good local person, market specialist, network. He can drive it. But that's not enough. You need to bring your own culture. You need to bring like you transfer all the know-how from the headquarter and from the existing team or location, everything that made you already successful. Mm-hmm. You need to include it as well. And so for us, the pitfall was like just hiring a local hero. It's not enough. Like
you sometimes it's by yourself, right?
Yeah, man, that's one thing. But like, you know, as a founder, you cannot be everywhere. So yeah, we started to send people. So if you send an experienced person who lives the culture, who knows everything, who knows like who to ask in the entire organization to get what, it makes things easier. So we started to send people and then build the local team. And influence the local guys and combine then the local hero thing with the existing know-how and pattern and everything. And this after, I mean, like we as you mentioned, we have customers in 75 countries and we have like 17 locations at the moment all over the world. And going from 1, 2, 3 until number 17, this was maybe the major learning for us. Like, right. And then at the end of the day, it's like people thing. Again, like you need the right people,
especially in this industry, right? Having the construction and real estate, old-fashioned. So I was wondering, okay, two follow-up questions to that. I was wondering, how did your initial vision for Plan Radar change? Like, how did the product evolve over time once you started expanding? And also, we talked a bit about acquiring and returning talent. How about what's been your most effective method for acquiring and retaining customers?
Customers now, okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, like how was the history? Like as mentioned before, we started as a point solution. So just it was in our case, it was defect management or snagging or punch lists. So just when you find errors or mistakes on construction site and you need to communicate it to the different people to resolve. Mm-hmm. So this was our first use case because it's also the biggest pain in the neck of the project manager and site managers. One of my co-founders, Tomagoy, he's coming from the industry. So he did that for more than 10 years. So he was the one like really understanding this pain point. So yeah, we started there as a point solution. And then our users started to do a lot of other things as well. So they started to basically communicate, share, collaborate on a lot of different things and use cases next to defect management. So thinking about like this point solution, just defect management, just in construction phase. Like nowadays, we expanded to the entire building lifecycle. That means like we're covering people from the planning phase, architects, engineers, mainly in interaction with all the construction guys from the construction phase, all the subcontractors, specialists, whatever. And then also in the operation phase where we have property managers, facility managers, asset managers. So it's the whole lifecycle of the building, even into deconstruction we are used. And they talk a lot of different things. They have a lot of different kind of reportings, but this main use case that they want to track information in an easy, fast way on the site, mobile first, that's the same for everybody. So then we started to build like solution modules and became a platform where we can also, let's say, have document management system, project management. We added things like interface or a middle where to easily connect to any kind of systems, no code base. So we built like this platform and then comparing, coming back to your question, like comparing it with the initial vision. Now it's, it's much more. We even changed the name. In the beginning, the name was Defect Radar, just for the defects. But then we saw, okay, we can do a lot of other things as well. And one other point was that
now is the whole plan.
The whole plan, everything. And the other thing was that we always ask our lighthouse customers to put our logo on their construction sites. And they always said like, look guys, we like you, we like the tool, but there is no way that defect is going to be written on my construction site. So makes a lot of sense. So we changed the name to Plan Radar.
No one wants to buy a real estate. Defect word is on it.
Defect, So made a lot of sense. And we changed the name. And then, like I said, the product really developed. And also in the very beginning, we were not thinking about like having a team of nearly 500 people and having customers from 75 countries all over the world, right? So this is something, as mentioned before, it came over time and we really saw we can solve this international problem. And so product evolved over time. And that's my answer.
Nice. So kind of, you don't, at the beginning, you don't try to be like everything to everyone. You start a bit more niche. You start with a defect, solving one particular problem, pain point for the customer. And then over time, as organically you grow, the customers are more, you just keep adding different functionalities to your platform and growing and expanding. Yeah, so that's important learning for founders, I would say, to start a
maybe
bit
to
more
add
niche.
Here, it's always, it's sorry to interrupt you, but to add here, it's, I think it's one of the most important things is also not to use your like identity or like your key USP. For us, it was, we are easy. You know, we help them to work and to collaborate easier. So even if you're growing and adding more functionality, normally you get more complex. So it's so hard to try to keep that in our case, like that easiness, easy to learn, easy to work. So don't forget like your main USP, although when you're growing the product.
Nice. And Sandra, the same part of the question was, how do you attract and retain customers? What's the most effective way that you...
So acquire customers, of course, it's sales. So for us, it was then like outbound and direct sales. It's an easy way to get in front of the customers, to talk to them, like just call them and talk to them and find a way to be in front of them. And this is a very easy way compared to like online marketing and everything, and also a very fast way outbound and direct to get feedback and be in the market. So for this was for us like the major driver in acquiring. Of course, nowadays we have like the entire marketing and sales mix, all channels or everything that you can think about, we tried it out. And then the other big thing is when you think about retaining the customers, it's the product, right? It needs to be a good product, it needs to be real value, and then you can scale. Because you will always be able to sell something, but then to retain the customers, there need to be real value. Otherwise, it's just like very
short. You
gotta
keep solving the problem for your customers.
Maybe the challenging, because I have chosen Jordan Belfort for my team.
Exactly.
So that's then maybe the challenging part for him. But like here at PlanRadar, he will even have a very good product to succeed.
Very cool. Very cool. Sander, let's start with some more tougher questions now. It's been fun so far. Now let's have a bit of twist in the conversation. But let's still keep it fun.
So if I don't want, I must not answer, right?
No. Sandra, what's your most expensive? You talked about it a bit, I think, already. You mentioned some fuck-ups. But what's your most expensive fuck-up and what did you learn from it?
Okay, that's not a tough question. Like as mentioned before, we had already our fuck-ups and we had our learnings already in the past, previous of PlanRadar. And I mean, the most expensive things or most expensive learnings would be for me, like there are three. First one was like stay in your domain. If you understand the domain, you will do less mistakes. For us, it was like in the past, we tried to diversify and we tried to build a healthy fast food chain on the site next to our IT business. We had even three locations already and nice product, but all the operations, this fucked up the company because we had no clue about operation in food business, right? Or in restaurants. It's just, I like to go to the restaurant. I like to eat and drink. It's easy. No, nothing is easy. You need to be in the domain and understand the challenges. And if you are in your domain that you understand and you learn from, then it's easier. So I would, based on that learning or challenge, or you called it fuck up, right? Based on that, I would say like, okay, you need to stay in your domain. And things are easier. Number two for us was like, if, and this is more specific on software or on SaaS, if you really want to scale, you need to have like a unified product. Because if you start to customize too much, then you cannot scale. So this is another mistake we did in the past. I mean, I would not call it a fuck up because also when you customize, you can earn money, right? Yeah. But then you need to put more service inside. We ended up selling man hours, basically. So our product transformed into a tailored solution for some clients. And yes, you can still do revenue, but when you're thinking about scaling SaaS or scaling a product globally, then it will not work that way. So don't customize. You cannot scale, or be aware about this trade-off.
Yeah.
And that's very hard in the beginning, because when you're a startup and you just want to get your revenue, and then you have people saying like, ah, okay, it's nice, I pay you, but change this for me and do that for me. Yeah, we did it with the other company, and then we ended up not being able to scale. So with PlanRadar, we had the same situation again, and we just said no to customers. Yeah, please. And they didn't understand. They say, look, price is not a matter. We pay whatever you like, but we need it that way. And we need user support, and we need, I don't know, whatever. And we said, like, no, we simply don't do that. We just sell monthly and yearly licenses. Yeah. And that's a very hard thing to say no to revenue, something that we learned the expensive way. And the third thing I would say, it also happened in one company. We put all our money on the product, and then we had nothing left for marketing and sales. So I'm saying, biggest learning, you can easily overspend on product, but you can never overspend on marketing and sales. So early, talk to the customers, go on the market. Nothing needs to be perfect. This is something that the Americans do much better than the Europeans. Mm-hmm. Just sell it and improve over time. I mean, I'm maybe not the Jordan Belfort way again, but you need a real product to retain, but yeah. It must not be perfect. And invest in marketing and sales and understand, like, if you really hit the market, if really somebody is ready to pay for it. And yeah, the three of them, these are, let's call them my major learnings.
I love it. They're so cool. I mean, they're good. Like, I love, I think this is so much to take for founders. So speaking of fuck ups, they come with, you know, tremendous amount of pressure. As a CEO, how do you keep it cool when the pressure gets high? The pressure gets
sure. I think this is also an experience thing, right? So as you can imagine, now I'm talking like freely about our challenges and learning from the past. I mean, like these 15 years ago, I was not that easy in that situation. And none of us, like also not the co-founders, it's clear. But what you learn from it is that, like, even if it gets intense, you should stay cool, because I mean
your team members are looking up to you, right? Like, they're checking, like, how are
sure and then then it's always, I think, like, yeah, you need to be authentic. Like, I have also, I know other managers who they have their temperature and is rising easily, but people know what they can expect. If it's always the same way, you understand. If you are like a nine-guided missile, it becomes a problem. But for me, one employee once told me that, yeah, he cannot imagine that I ever get out of my comfort zone, which is actually not true, but I try to keep my temper. And at the end of the day, for me, it's always like to get back on that base. And I think that's the most important thing. People want the same thing. So you are discussing with somebody who maybe wants the same thing as like you, but he or she sees it differently. And then you start to fight. But if you have this common base, okay, we all want the best, but then we fight and discuss, then you can always come back to that base of like a common, let's call it common advantage, or if you're in the same team, then it's the common goal. But also at the end of the day, a customer or any other person also wants an advantage. So if you can come back to that, it helps you to stay cool. And then if things really heat up, I always try like to delay response time, like to cool down and think a little bit, like something like answering the next day or stuff like that, which I didn't in the past. I remember a few situations where I was responding at 2 or 3 a.m. at night and things get worse. Like, just cool down, relax, maybe try to talk to people. It's always better than writing. And I mean, but I said, like, this is something that evolved over time. I was not like that in the very beginning. It's just comes with experience. And at the end of the day, okay, what can happen? Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of problems every day. There are a lot of challenges every day. There are going to be fuck-ups. But the most important thing is, like, you learn from them and don't do the same mistake twice.
You also pick your battles over time, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You learn how to do it. Sandro, what's the best leadership advice you've ever received?
Yeah.
That's also a good question. So me, I always try to improve myself, like to learn, to get also feedback from other guys, or so talk to experienced guys, because most of them, they have some learnings or something it can share with you. So first thing would be like to talk to as many people as you can and exchange and get feedback, because in the past there was always the mindset also, yeah, I don't share information because maybe it's stolen from me or it's confident or something is happening. No, like exchange makes you better. And I think the best advice that I received was maybe like to let people do their own mistakes. Mm-hmm. And just help them to learn from it, because otherwise you will do everything by yourself.
Yeah,
you will do everything all the time by yourself, and you think it's perfect the way you do it, but you will always do it the same. But then you need to recognize that, yeah, maybe you are at 100%. Nobody's at 100%, right? Mm-hmm. But you think you are at 100. Maybe nobody else sees this 100. 90% is enough for everybody else. So you're losing a lot of effort, and it's much better also to invest in training the other people to get maybe to your, as a leader, to your 80 or 90% of what you think is the right thing. The other thing is maybe, yeah, maybe it's not the right thing. But like, okay, let the other do their mistakes, help them to learn from it instead of solving it for them. Mm-hmm. And then they can improve, and then they can do it for you. If they don't improve, it's wrong people. But yeah. At the end of the day, otherwise you will always do everything by yourself.
Yeah, you'll keep micromanaging. Micromanagement is like, it sucks, man, especially.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But it's also very hard to let go, right? So, yeah. And then at the end
especially
of the day,
always, stage, right? When you're like,
yeah,
like,
sure. Yeah, sure, sure, sure. When I imagine the early days, we were working like 6 days per week, like also, also Sunday, only Saturday off in the other company. But at a certain point in time, I mean, yeah, things need to be done, and it's better to do everything somehow than not to do it. But like, yeah, when you grow, you can find good people, and the good people should help you and not be an additional burden.
Ideally, you find experts, like people who are actually better at this particular thing than you are, because you can be like the best.
Steve Jobs said that, right? Yeah. He's on my team, no problem.
Exactly. What's the biggest personal sacrifice you've made for PlanRadar?
I would say nothing except sleep. I sacrificed sleep, but like,
that's
next to
one.
That, no. I mean, like, yeah, as said, like, we, yeah, I mean, nowadays I would not work. Yeah. I mean, like, yes, sometimes I work on Saturday. Last Saturday, I worked the entire Saturday because I was on holiday. I needed to prepare for the other week, but I wouldn't. If it feels like big personal sacrifice, then it's maybe not the right thing. Because you spend so much time at work, if it feels like sacrifice, then I mean, maybe you're doing the wrong stuff.
Right. I love that approach. Because founders' lives, it gets intense and at times
can be
lonely. What do you, the next question would be, what do you do to keep your sanity? Like, what's maybe one personal habit that's, you know, had a big impact on your entrepreneurial journey?
It sounds like two questions. I mean, like, okay, yes. Yeah, for me, like, I mean, like, to keep the balance between work, it's of course like family. I have like three kids, so yeah. I also need to spend time with them. And I try
How old are your kids?
14, 12, or nearly 13 on 16th of August, 13 and 5. So two boys, one girl. I had two kids before I was 30. So even next to the very intense time of founding the first companies and working a lot, I built a family, and everything is possible. You just need to have a good like time management. Sometimes I always worked at night. That's what I mentioned in the beginning. Like, I always sacrifice
sleep. I wanted to say that I love your approach, Sander, because, you know, like, there is this a kind of culture that's being promoted among like young people and founders, that you gotta hustle, that you gotta sacrifice things, that you're gonna be obsessed, that it's just, you know, crazy journey of a founder. It's tough as fuck, and you're gonna sacrifice a lot of things to actually get to where you want to get. But I love to have this kind of approach, to hear this kind of approach like yours also, which is maybe more like I don't know, balanced and more healthy, and also shows that you can have both. You don't have to, like, for sure you have to compromise on a lot of stuff, and like, times you're the most like valuable asset, and there's less of time when you're building a big company. But you can still do it. You don't have to sacrifice much. You don't have to sacrifice your happiness, your family, or whatever. Like, you can have it, right?
Yeah, as mentioned, and for me also, maybe to underline the most important thing, it should not feel like as a sacrifice. Yeah, you're spending a lot of time, yeah, working 16 hours a day sometimes. But like at the end of the day, I can decide when, right? So I stop earlier to see my family, then everybody is asleep. And then I start working again until 2 or 3 a.m. Yeah, that's a sacrifice. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's sleep. And at the end, everything is possible. It's just a matter of time management. And like, I mean, yeah, when is the right time for family? Never. Yeah, it's like always. Both. Yeah. So, yeah, as I said, for me, it's like vacation with family, family, sports, of course. I try to do sports in the morning. I used to do it in the evening, but I cannot do it anymore because I'm too tired. They are not strict enough. So I need to do it in the morning. And I mean, then personal habit or impact,
what's
as you
your,
said.
Before you go there, what's your favorite sport? You said you were doing sports.
Like my favorite one is like football and tennis, but I had my third surgery now on the knee, so I stopped playing championship now.
Sports is health, as they say, right? As well.
Sorry?
Sports is health, as they say. So like first surgery already, knee is almost not working.
Yeah, that's football, right? But yeah, also like tennis. And then in the morning, it's just like running or like going to the gym for a little bit of time. Okay. But like just like trying to do something. It's less than before, but you need to do something.
We should play tennis together sometime.
We can. Tennis,
if you still can with your knee. But you can.
Sure. Now I play more tennis than football. I like it.
Nice.
Yeah, we can do it. I also tried paddle, by the way. This is really nice. And they play a lot in Spain, right?
It's so popular in Spain. Like everywhere you
Paraguay. You should look on the business league in... now it's in Madrid. It's not in Barcelona. But the business league, the winner is Plan Raider. Our Spanish team really in Madrid, they are really good in paddle. They won the league.
Okay.
Anyway, so coming back to the question, I think like in terms of habits for this was the private part, like more on entrepreneurial point of view, I would say for me a big game changer was the way how I approach a task. I mentioned also in the beginning that I spend a certain time on like let's say email tasks, meetings, email tasks. Then it's the way how you approach the different things. And for me, the Eisenhower principle, you know it.
No.
You heard about it. You should search it. Eisenhower principle. You decide based on importance and urgency. And then you have like different metrics. You see like you have things that are important and urgent, or important and not urgent, or things that are urgent and important, or urgent and not important. And based on that, you just do by yourself or what is urgent and important. And if it's important and not urgent, you still do by yourself, but you can like plan or delay. And if it's not important and not urgent, then guess what? You skip it. You don't do it. And this way you can approach all the things that you're doing and you will not spend time on the wrong stuff. You should search it. For me, this was a game changer, Eisenhower principle.
Sander, two more questions before I let you go. What's that, future technology that you're most excited about in the construction industry? Maybe, this is going to be, again, like second question, like two in one. How do you make sure Plan Raider stays ahead of the curve?
I will answer the second one first. Of course, you always need to stay ahead of the curve. You need to further develop and change things and update and try to be like innovative next to your bread and butter revenue, because our bread and butter revenue is still like somehow moving people from pen and paper to mobile devices, which sounds not that innovative. innovative stuff is the whole, you know, AI-driven drone 360-degree capturing of construction sites. This is really cool. This is stuff we're also working on, but it's not bread and butter revenue. Mm-hmm. Right? When you 40 to 50% of your customers are changing pen and paper to a mobile device, if you tell them about a drone flying around 360-degree capturing, it's maybe not a good selling point.
Yeah.
So Jordan would never say that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you need to get the people where they are, but you need to develop further and stay ahead. Like, so invest in innovation and R&D and do the cool stuff as well. And coming back to the first question, like more specifically about the construction industry. Yeah, I mentioned already, you need to get the users where they are. But on the other hand, you know, the real fancy stuff. When we think about like what we are doing for the construction industry, we had them track a lot of data and learn from them. I think at the moment we're doing like more of 3 tera per month of data. And this is, I'm not talking about like plants, which are huge. I'm talking about text data stuff. And this is a lot. So out of this data, the customers can learn a lot of things. Let's say we can do stuff like predictive maintenance. We can do like understand based on the data what kind of defects may arise in certain areas with certain material. We can help them to improve their own workforce when they're always the same things are happening again. We can do like also auto recording. We can simply like bring AI to real life there. I'm not, maybe not the really hot fancy stuff, but something step by step that really helps in day to day on the construction site. And based on all the data and how they track it at the moment and how they learn or not learn from it, there are a lot of fancy things you can do there.
Sander, last one. What's your ultimate goal for PlanRadar in like the next 5-10 years? Or and another one, again, 2-in-1. Like any exciting projects or initiatives that you're currently having or looking forward to that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, sure. So, what's our target? Of course, like looking at the market that we are covering, construction, real estate, it's like that's the biggest industry in every single country of the world.
Yeah.
Nothing is bigger than construction and real estate. And I mean, like, as you mentioned, we have 150,000 users and more than 25,000 customers, but this is like a drop in the bucket. It's nothing. So we still want to grow. We still want to serve and double down on all our existing markets where we are. And I mean, next 5 years, it's a very long period, especially in software or tech. Yeah. But we are category leader in Europe. We want to become category leader worldwide. Mm-hmm. And also me personally, I cannot remember the last IPO from Austria. Mm-hmm. So IPO sounds nice. Maybe not at the moment, but in a few years, this will recover. And let's see. For us, the focus is now growing and serving all of these untouched potential and companies out there. And then what is happening on our side? So we are releasing at the moment PlanRadar Site View. Mm-hmm. So this is a head-mounted 360-degree camera. Like you can use any kind of cheap camera device as well. And then you can just walk the sites and it automatically track everything around you. Nice. And then you have some kind of time machine because the AI recognize where you're walking on the digital plan and automatically pinpoint everything everywhere. And then you can go into a certain room and then use the time slider just to see how it looked maybe 6 months ago, 2 months ago, whatever. You can see what is behind the wall.
That's awesome.
Right? Yeah, something like that. And we do it in a very easy way because there are already some approaches like that. But it's very, in terms, again, easy to use. You need to walk the site, wait 15 minutes, then do the next 10 steps. For us, it's just like normal behavior. It's easy, it's fast. And this can be really a game changer. And we are the first, experience and feedback with our pilot customers are very good. So I'm looking forward to roll this out probably.
Amazing. Sander, love it. Thank you so much. That sounds amazing. I'm really looking forward to seeing it as well. Wishing you all the best. Thank you so much for this podcast. I truly loved having you on the show. It was so much fun. I hope you also had fun. And I hope to see you soon in Barcelona.
Yeah, for Paddle, for sure.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Ciao.